Hey, it's Dr. Trek, Larry Nemechek, coming at you straight out of Portal 47. And you're listening to the Shuttle Pod. Oh, I see what you did there.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Shuttle Pod podcast. This is podcast number 38, and today is Thursday, June 29th, 2017. I'm your host, Kaylee Iacovino, and I'm joined by Matt Wright and Brian Drew.
Hello.
Hey, Kayla.
Hey, you guys. Brian. How's it going?
It is dandy. Welcome back, Kayla.
Thanks. Yeah, I've been away now for almost a month. Basically, all of June, I've been away. So wow. I've not heard much at all about the flurry of Star Trek Discovery news that's been going on the last few weeks. So I am looking forward to getting caught up on everything that's been going on.
So you're saying Star Trek doesn't land in volcanoes? Like, what?
Yeah. So, yeah, for those, for the listeners, I've been away living on a volcano with the BBC for the last...
Literally.
Month. Yeah. Literally. Yeah, actually. Literally. On a volcano in Africa, filming a documentary. So look for that.
That's very cool.
Early next year. But yeah, I basically had hardly any internet access at all. You know, obviously when I was up on the volcano, none whatsoever. And then in the hotel, just like very, very minimal access. So yeah, I was not following any of the Trek news over the past month, basically. So as soon as I got back to internet contact, I started looking up, you know, what Trek movie had been posting and seeing like all the stuff coming in. And there's a lot. There's a lot to digest.
Yeah, there was quite a flurry over the past 10 days or so.
Yeah.
In fact, I was away for some of it myself. I was on vacation when this whole EW story broke last week. So we'll all learn together.
Nice. Yeah, it's hard when you step out of it for a while and try to come back because there's so much. It's hard to join the conversation because you're not sure, you know, what's new and what's, you know, what's brand new news and what's already kind of already knew that or...
Right. Mm-hmm. And you're behind on the latest, you know, speculation and all that stuff.
It's funny too, just because, like, man, we're in a whole period of kind of Trek riches compared to, say, I don't know, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, this is kind of an amazing time where you really can be gone for like 2 weeks and be like, I just missed like this huge reveal of Discovery or something. It's kind of fun.
It's a good time to be a Trek fan right now.
I think so.
So, all right, why don't we start with the latest news and work our way backwards?
All right, let's do it.
So there was some big news today that I was a party to. That it was announced today that there will be an official Star Trek Discovery panel at San Diego Comic-Con, which is in just a few weeks.
Right.
And that will be held in Ballroom 20. Which, for those of you not hip to the SDCC lingo, is a big deal. That's, you know, like Hall H is the big, the room where you normally hear about the big movies, movie stuff going on. Ballroom 20 is like the Hall H for TV series. So it's a huge ballroom. You have to stand in line all day long to have even a shot at getting in there. So that's good news. And I guess that's not super unexpected, the fact that they would try to book that space, because they definitely, I think, want to make a splash.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is good news. Good news.
Yeah, I would have...
Yeah, we were kind of expecting. We were expecting this.
I would have been concerned, I think, if they didn't have any presence at San Diego.
Yeah, well... Exactly. If they didn't, we'd be very worried.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've been wondering for the past few days as schedules were starting to be released. We were wondering why we weren't seeing anything.
Yeah.
So
the good news,
it's a relief. It's a relief to see it actually.
The other interesting, nice thing about this announcement is that it says join the cast and creatives. So that will be really nice because, you know, the last time they've had any kind of representation, like at Mission New York or, of course, Comic-Con last year. It was essentially no one. It was just some smoke and mirrors and you know, I mean, Brian Fuller, of course, he's very charismatic talking about it a year ago. But otherwise, there was nothing.
Yeah, they didn't really have anything. Yeah.
Right.
He was mostly talking about the 50th anniversary, wasn't he?
That's what the Hall H panel was last year. Right. Yeah, it was a 50th anniversary celebration that they tacked Discovery on to the end of that.
Yeah, snuck in a little Discovery thing. And so it's really nice to be like, hey, we actually know, well, we know pretty much every cast member at this point. We haven't seen them necessarily, but they've been announced. And so that'll be great to actually have real faces of, you know, real Discovery people in front of people, you know, in front of the audience.
Yeah, it'll finally feel real, because I think there's still kind of an air of unreality to everything.
Oh yeah,
it's totally a believe it when I see it kind of thing, and it has been for a while.
So, yeah.
I've felt for a long time that seeing the cast on stage, either in person or even, you know, on a YouTube video someone shot or something, but seeing them in real life on a stage is going to be the moment for me when, like you say, Brian, when it's real. And I'm excited because this, in my opinion, is the first Star Trek Discovery panel. I mean, like you said, Matt, there's Mission New York and Hall H last year and other things, but like this is the real deal.
Exactly, because the Mission New York one, even then, they were basically allowed to just say, "Hey, we're working here, but ask us questions about anything but that."
Yeah,
you know? Yeah, it was one of the most disappointing panels I've ever been to in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, so now at least, I mean, again, CBS is being very careful with this, so I'm sure it'll be like, hey, we can talk about 3 talking points, and then that's it. You know what I mean? They probably still won't be able to talk about a lot, other than they can talk about maybe some process and how it's going, and, you know, oh, everybody's amazing in it, that kind of thing could be said, but
yeah.
We'll see.
I think it's worth speculating a little bit, because it's quite possible they'll come, you know, I almost expect that they'll come with something to show off. So they'll have scenes maybe from the first episode to show, or they'll behind the scenes stuff, or a new trailer. Or
hopefully they have a new trailer. Yeah, it would be very disappointing if they don't.
Yeah, I agree. I think there'll be a new trailer.
You think it's a new trailer? I know they'll have something, right? And I think it's going to be big-ish. You know,
And they better actually show us something beyond the pilot. Because that's what the entire first trailer was made of.
That's
we better
true.
Actually see the Discovery itself. Even if it's just like a little tease at the end, they gotta do it. They're gonna be really disappointed.
They won't want to give away too much, obviously, but like a little tease.
Yeah,
of the
just
ship
a little, hey, look, here it is. It's
right.
It does exist. Because we've only shown you the Shens out before. So.
Yeah. I'm excited. I think for anyone who's going to San Diego Comic-Con, anyone who's listening to this podcast is a big enough Trek fan that it's probably worth it for you to spend the day waiting in line. I know it's kind of a pain in the butt, but San Diego Comic-Con is basically the queue convention, the line convention. You just stand in line. I'll stand in line all day, every day. But this one I think is really going to be worth it for Trek fans. Like, when was the last time we had anything going on at San Diego Comic-Con, let alone a TV show?
Exactly.
So this is big.
Yeah, I think the last time that there was this much excitement for Star Trek at San Diego was when JJ showed up with Leonard and everybody, and they basically announced that Leonard was in the movie and blah, 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 blah. I think that was the last time, and that was over 10 years ago.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was exactly 10 years ago.
So this is one to add to your calendar and try to make it. And if you can't make it to San Diego Comic-Con, there's going to be stuff online. People are going to be live. We're going to be live tweeting it.
We're going to try to cover the heck out of it.
We'll cover the heck out of it. And there will be video online. I am assuming that that Comic-Con will have video that they put online. But there will be stuff to see. So definitely, like, if you're just, you know, hanging out on the internet that day, keep your eyes peeled. There will be a lot of coverage around it, and something big's probably going to come out of it. So that's super exciting.
Yep.
Yep.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's a big day, guys. All right. So I think we've covered that as much as we possibly can with the little information that we do have. The other big thing we found out this week was that Jonathan Frakes is returning to the franchise.
Yes.
Yes.
He will be directing an episode of the series. We don't know which one. We think it might be episode 6 or 7, but we're not sure. This was great news. I mean, you know, we all like it when we see, like, connections between the different generations of the franchise. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this has a gives you a nice warm fuzzy feeling.
There's so many, you know, it's like, yeah, there's so many reasons it makes me feel that, like, because like you said, the connection between the franchises, it's almost like Jonathan Frakes is sort of giving his seal of approval if he's willing to work on it,
right?
And he knows right. Trek, and he's a really good director.
Yeah,
so that's just good news all around.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's definitely exciting to have him come on board, and you know, I don't think it's any big secret that Discovery has kind of had some PR issues with the fan base.
Yep.
I think there's been a certain negative vibe about the lack of information and the delays and whatnot. And like this being announced, I think it was good PR. It made everybody feel good. You know, it's like one of those things. It's like, here you go, Trek fans. Check this out. This is for you. You know, it's that kind of a thing.
It was very smart of them to do that. Yes.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And when we were speculating about Discovery, I mean, I don't know, when was Discovery announced? Like a year and a half ago, whenever it was. It feels like five lifetimes ago.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, me, Kel, and Jared speculating that we thought they would probably, you know, bring Frakes in to be, like, you know.
Because he's, like, an obvious choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an obvious
choice. He's got a great career as a director, especially for TV. So, there you go.
Yeah.
Natural fit.
It's a natural fit. Looking forward to it. It would not surprise me if he was not the first Trek alumni to get involved in this production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because think about all the Trek alum that do direct, even now. Roxanne Dawson went on to a lot of directing. So, I mean...
Mm. Robbie Duncan McNeil.
Yeah, Duncan McNeil. All three of those guys, Frakes and Duncan McNeil and Roxanne Dawson, they all still show up doing stuff, like, to this day. So, you know, directing things. So it's entirely possible we could have a little rotating group of, you know, Trek alum.
Yeah, and even if he wanted to, I suppose Nick Meyer.
Yeah, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Because Nick Meyer, I don't think, has ever done TV. I think he's always been cinematic. So I wonder what that would be like for him.
And what?
I think he could pull it off.
Has there been any change in that? Like, what, you know, his role with Discovery seems to have become kind of enigmatic.
Well, his role has always, I think it was overstated in the beginning. And then if we actually have an interview with him from, what was that, 3 or 4 months ago, I think.
Yeah.
And he straight up just says, in a very Nick Meyer, very erudite way, but he basically just says, I'm here to be a consultant and I'm here to bounce stuff off of. But it's he's not in the writer's room, like, you know, grinding out scripts with people. He's there to give notes. And so he's got a lot of freedom. We know that he's gone off and done all kinds of other personal projects and side projects. So he's just around as kind of a, you know, a guy to kind of shape some of the younger writers and, you know.
Yeah, mentor.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, that's exactly the word I was looking for. There we go, mentor. He's there to mentor the younger writers. Because a lot of that writing staff is green, like very young.
Yeah, I was under the impression, though, that he was going to write at least one script.
Right, and so when Fuller was still in charge, and this is probably still true, you know, overall, is that we do know that he co-wrote part of the pilot with Fuller. So, that was
announced. I thought Fuller co-wrote the pilot with Thomas Kurtzman.
Part one, and part two is Fuller and Meyer. We don't know what of all that remains since we kind of know it's been retooled a bit. Like, but there you go. That's all we know for sure. Like, publicly,
it's interesting.
Yes,
very interesting.
So we shall see what is there. But we do know that Meyer is actively giving script notes because we've seen a tweet from Aaron Harberts who tweeted at Stella, which is his, you know, little dog proxy of sorts on Twitter. Said, "Yeah, your owner gives great script notes or something like that, like a month ago." So we definitely know he's doing something. Like he is actively involved.
Mm-hmm. That's good news too for the whole production,
which is good news for sure. So on the other production side of things, we've gotten another pretty big announcement, which is we finally have a premiere date for Discovery.
See, that's
over long coming.
That's three heavy hitter pieces of news. Right in a row, right off the top.
These
three super big deal things. We could probably talk at length about each of these.
Huge.
Yeah. Thank God.
And again, goes back to making it more real, because without a date, you know, it's like, all right, they're making this show, maybe, sort of, but
Yeah.
So it's what, September 24th, is that correct? Sunday, September 24th, 2017.
Yep.
And annoyingly, I think the East Coast gets it first.
They do.
Lame.
Which makes sense.
Not fair.
That's the way it always is.
Now, see, what we don't quite know is the caveat of that's the broadcast they get it first, but we're not entirely sure how they make it available on all access.
Or what time for the future episodes and all that. Yeah.
Well, even this one, because they claim it'll be available as soon as it airs, like right after it airs. But for who, right?
Yeah.
My assumption. I
see what you mean. Yeah, because if it airs in New York and they're
7:30,
2-3 hours ahead of the West Coast. Is that right?
Yeah.
Then
so it airs there at 8:30. It's really, yeah.
So that's 5:30.
It's really 5:30 here
on the West Coast. So does that mean we can watch it at 6:30 online?
So I think so, because how they're not really gonna. I sincerely doubt that they'd be like, "Ooh, we just figured out where your region is. No, you can't see this yet." For the online part.
I mean, they could.
Mm. I don't. All right. I will say there's a possibility they'll do that, because when Twin Peaks came back, the premiere aired, the first 2 hours aired on Showtime.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were theoretically supposed to be able to watch the other two episodes right after that.
Right. Just like they're trying to do here, basically. With,
right. Yeah. But we weren't able to do it right away. Because they were waiting for the West Coast.
So it's like lowest common denominator kind of thing. Of like, sorry, you have to wait until everyone.
Well, I bet it's and I bet it's West Coast. I bet you they're not going to wait for Hawaii.
Oh yeah. Oh no.
Yeah, no, they'll stop at West Coast.
It's New York and LA, and then it'll drop. Pretty much.
Sorry, Hawaii and the Aleutians.
Sorry. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so we know that after the special premiere, they're just supposed to be made available in all access, and we assume that's just like all. The same time everywhere.
Hopefully.
If you go by what like The Good Fight did, it seems to be midnight Pacific time is when they're releasing them.
Okay.
So 3 in the morning on the East
Coast.
So
3 a.m. for the East Coast. But
that's annoying midnight.
Yeah. So for people who are kind of insomniacs, especially on the West Coast, you could actually immediately go watch it Sunday night / Monday morning and just, you know, drop a lot of spoilers on people by the time they've woken up. So that's going to be the that's going to be the uncool part about that, is before any of us could really get in there and do some analysis and, you know, write some stuff up for, like, say, I don't know, a Trek movie, somebody could.
Well, no, the real annoying thing is we're going to have to stay up and watch it every night at midnight.
Yeah, then it becomes some escalation, right? A game kind of like. Ugh.
But keep in mind, guys, they may not keep the same release pattern.
You know? Yeah,
they may not. We're
totally speculating.
Very true. We're speculating based on what they've done so far.
Yeah. I mean, no offense to that show, but this has got much more demand.
Oh, absolutely. Just to put a little button on this about dates, because I've seen people ask, and all the info's out there, but just so folks know, if you're Canadian, you get it the same day we do for the premiere. Up in, on the Space Channel, and then they pretty much get the same schedule we do, but those guys get to get it through a cable if they want. Yeah. They don't have to do it streaming only. They can do it through a streaming package called Crave, but they don't have to. So Canada pretty much mirrors us. Anybody else in the world gets it through Netflix, and they get it no later than 24 hours after we get it. So basically this schedule is the 24th is actually the 25th for anybody in a Netflix region.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to advance it a day.
Okay.
So there you go. Because I've seen people ask, they go, well, I'm in the UK, when do I get it? And the answer is you get it from Netflix and you get it the next day.
Well, no, you know, it's already going to be the 25th in the UK by the time it airs here. So they're waiting less than 24 hours.
So I think they're actually,
12 or 18 hours.
Yeah, exactly. It's not actually 24 hours. You're right. It's whatever, however they determine it. But yes, so they won't have to wait too long.
All right, cool.
That's great.
Yeah, that's cool. So there's more to what we heard the other day. It's a 15 episode season, obviously, and I think that's two more than was originally planned for.
Yes, it was 13.
So that's that's always a good sign when they add episodes and not subtract them.
Mm-hmm.
And The show's first season will be split in two. The first eight shows will air in the fall, and then I guess there'll be a bit of a hiatus maybe in December, and then it will come back in January to finish off the final seven.
Yep.
And I think we've privately been speculating about this for a while, since it seemed like it's taking them a while to produce these shows.
Yeah.
I mean, they started production, what, January? And here we are, it's almost July, and they're on episode six. So that's extremely mellow pace for a television production. So
yeah, especially when with lots of post production.
Yeah.
So
this way they can it gives them a bit of breathing room.
Yep.
To do everything and do everything the right way.
Yeah. So, it was pretty much guaranteed that they're gonna go down this route once we realize that they're behind schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people that are upset about that and think they're being milked by CBS more, but I'm not so sure that that's really why.
Yeah, no.
It's definitely not. Yeah. It's definitely not to try and milk it. They don't have them to deliver. It's pretty clear.
Yeah, I'd rather have a nice polished looking program than some slipshod, Star Trek 5 level effect.
Absolutely.
So it's okay. At least for me, it is.
I agree. You don't want something rushed.
Yeah. So, 15 episodes, good stuff. More than we were expecting. So
exciting. This is actually going to happen soon.
I know. It's less than 2 months away.
Two months.
3 months. Three months. I'm sorry. Never mind.
Yeah.
Less than 3 months, though.
Less than three.
Technically, months away. Yes. Less than 3 months. Yeah. Cool. Good.
Yeah, it is cool.
Good to think about that way, because it still seems like September. No, it's not that far.
Yeah.
It's not that far.
It really isn't. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, like San Diego Comic-Con is in what? Two weeks? 3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Three weeks.
Yeah, it's the 22nd is the
date. Yeah, so, but it's San Diego Comic-Con's, the preview night is in 3 weeks exactly from today.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot to do before then. And then, of course, Star Trek Las Vegas, 2 weeks after that, less than 2 weeks after that. So it's just gonna be going from now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's clearly where they're going to plan on kicking off their marketing and everything else. And it's probably going to get pretty intense as far as that goes, because as we've spoken about both in print and on this podcast, there's so much riding on this for CBS with this online service. Like, this needs to happen. This needs to be a hit. They need, they need Star Trek fans and casual fans as well. Giving them their $5.99 or $6.99 or whatever it is every month,
mm-hmm.
in order for this, this is an important part of CBS's future.
Oh yeah, it's very close to being a make it or break it thing for their streaming service.
Yeah,
for all
so
access.
So expect a full court.
Yeah, for all access.
Yeah, so expect a full court press from a marketing standpoint,
which is great.
From San Diego all the way till the times. All the way until when?
Yeah,
let's just hope they don't screw it up. So jaded. From
which part?
Just
which
the
part?
The market. Well, all of it, but the marketing.
The whole thing. Yeah.
I've really learned, especially after what happened with Beyond and everything, how important the marketing is. You got to get people hyped.
Yes.
Yeah.
So important.
We really it's like you guys were saying. Hopefully at Comic-Con, that's the start. And then I mean honestly we should be seeing TV commercials at that point, if it was up to me.
Oh man,
yeah. I don't know if we're gonna get
them too early for that, but I'm just saying.
Well, I think August I could see beginning of August.
Yeah, and that's realistic.
Or middle of August maybe.
Yeah, that's more realistic, because you get closer to the return of all the shows in September.
Right, and kids start going back to school, and families are home, and so people are starting to focus on their TV shows.
And the perfect synergy, and man, I can only think CBS, this is a no-brainer, and they know this, is, duh, they better be putting Discovery commercials during The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah, they will.
They better be. If they don't, something's wrong.
It's the number one comedy on television.
And it's,
they will totally do
that. They will. They absolutely. So
they might do some kind of lame cross promotion too on the show
itself.
So.
Yeah, so bad. Yeah, if you do that.
Sheldon will get all excited about the show.
Exactly.
And do something.
Well,
stupid.
For example, they could have them hold this Entertainment Weekly that came out and be like, "Here, look at this." Running around. Oh, the first pictures. It's like, yep. not.
Yeah, who knows?
You know, that kind of thing.
Who knows? So,
all right.
And that, we'll see. And that, Matt, is a great segue into a ton of other news that came out, right, from this Entertainment Weekly thing.
Yes, we get a ton of little bits.
So now we're really getting, for me, into the stuff that I really, really missed, because I've been back for a few days, so I saw the Frakes thing just barely. I saw the SDCC thing today. I had heard about their premiere date. So now we're getting into the details where I'm like, I need you guys to sort of fill me in on all the little bits and pieces. And I'm also curious to hear what your reactions were when you first heard about it, and what the feeling was, you know, on the old internet with, like, mm-hmm. how people reacted to all this stuff, because I missed all that.
All right, so hit us. What do you want to know? What do you want to know?
Well, so I guess what are all the bits and pieces from the EDA? I don't know which came out of the Entertainment Weekly story and what didn't. They talked about the look of the Shenzhou and the Discovery ships. They talked about, there were pictures in it, right? And they showed pictures of the transporter room. We saw more pictures of costumes and stuff. So I don't know what struck you guys as some of the most important things to come out of that.
Well, I think the first thing we saw, right, was Jason Isaacs.
Yep, the first image was Captain Lorca in command of the Discovery.
Right. Although you can't make out too much of the Discovery Bridge itself.
It's basically him, and then conveniently placed kind of blur behind him. So you don't really get to see anything about the Discovery Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The only positive is that the little bits that we can glean from it, which is mostly like a color palette thing behind him, it definitely looks like it's brighter than the Shenzhou. Because everyone was like, whoa, the Shenzhou is super dark. Like, you know, the bridge is super dark. Yeah. Like, this doesn't seem like the more bright, kind of positive future that we're supposed to be seeing. So, there's promise there. And to go with that, that was what a lot of the comments and stuff on the website were like, hey, look, it looks brighter. Hey, look, there's, like, you could see some color behind it that it looks like they purposely lit the set with some of the colors that we know from TOS, like, just to kind of throw some nice lighting back there. So there's some, you know, there's some blues and some golds and stuff lit up in the back. So, you know, pretty positive. And one of the other things that photo did was confirm that Jason Isaacs is not using makeup, because people had sort of thought, well, he might be getting prosthetics, because there was a video that he put up on Instagram of him getting one of the life casts made, you know, that they would do for prosthetics.
Yeah, the green goo.
The green goo. So he actually put that up a couple months ago, and then was obviously chastised that he kind of leaked that inadvertently. And then more recently, he put it back up. So, but that actually was something that made its way around the interwebs a couple months ago, which then led to this, oh man, is he like not a human? Oh, so no, he's very much a human, but... Mm-hmm. That prosthetic thing, well, the life mask for that we assume is for prosthetics must be for prosthetics. Like, it must be them attempting to make, you know, a latex appliance. Because you always do that, obviously, like, not on the person. You make your, you know, you sculpt your makeup on a copy of the person.
Right.
So he, now that leaves a whole other thing of, does he get some crazy disfigurement, you know, in an engagement, in a battle or something? Who knows? You know, we don't know why he needs the prosthetic.
I mean, it could be anything.
Exactly. It could be all kinds of things. Who knows? But there you go. So, yes, he's human. And he looks pretty good, like, sitting there on the bridge, all commanding-like.
He does. He looks very Starship Captain.
Yeah, he does. He looks very military with that short haircut and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, he definitely fits into, like, the TOS era.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Strong jaw.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And I see there's a quote about him. It says, I'm reading from our own article here. According to EW, Lorca is described as, quote, a steely Federation starship captain who's considered a brilliant military tactician.
Yep.
I like the steely. He's steely.
He is steely. And as somebody pointed out, you can't quite see 100%, but it sure looks like the sideburns are correct, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah, the pointed sideburns.
You know, I didn't even think to look for that. Yeah.
He's pretty much face on, so you can't totally tell. But just looking at it, it kind of looks like, yep, they come to the correct, Starfleet barber standard point.
That's awesome. I love it.
So that's great, cool. You know.
Excellent. Gene would be very happy.
Right? Yeah, it would.
Cool.
So that's the first thing, that's chronologically, that's actually the very first tease of the article that they gave us.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that works out. We're sort of working our way forward.
And now we can go into maybe something I think that caused a bit of controversy when the photo appeared. We got a picture of the Shenzhou's transporter room.
Oh, yes. This is a very split. We've got a very kind of 50-50 split in the fandom about this photo.
Mm, interesting.
Yes.
Kelly, you've seen it,
yes,
right?
And I'm looking at it again now.
Yeah, take it in and see since you haven't really seen this, you know, and analyzed it the way we have, what do you think?
Yeah, let's get your hot take.
All right, so this is like a pretty much virgin reaction. I've seen the picture, but I have not had time to like look at it and think about it. So this is like really initial reaction. I mean, it's completely different than this is the one right where it's the two of them in like a tactical kind of uniform.
Correct.
Yeah.
Big dish things behind them. It's a different kind of transporter room than we've ever seen before. I would not have guessed it was a transporter room if they didn't tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like, it's almost got like a retro vibe. Like the little dish things behind them remind me almost of like props on prop planes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily, when you're saying there's like a huge split in the fandom, I don't look at this and like have a problem with it.
So there's a huge group of people who basically feel like you and think it's cool and kind of steampunkish, etc.
Yeah,
you know,
steampunk is a good word to describe
right.
it. Yeah.
And then there's people who are like the exact same thing, which is ew, it's steampunk and it doesn't belong here.
This is different. We've never seen
it's this like,
before.
Oh, it's too different. This couldn't
be. It's not
be.
Canon.
Yeah, lots of that.
Well,
so there's either people who think it looks neat and not advanced, because remember the Shenzhou is supposed to be older than whatever we get to see from the Discovery. They made that very clear. So.
Yeah, there's something almost old about it. Like, you know, like you can see the way it works. You can see, you know, it's not just like a disc that you're standing on that magically beams you somewhere. It's got
And I think
parts.
It actually fits nicely with the new transporter effect that we saw in the trailer.
Which I love.
Which has the really cool kind of like mapping, scanning you know, mapping out your body kind of thing.
Mm.
Now, here's a cool sci-fi thing that I don't know if they ever intended this, but where my mind went, being, you know, the huge nerd for sci-fi from the 80s and 90s that I am, is, y'all have seen Tron, I'm sure, at some point, right? Okay, so when they get sucked in, they get scanned through a laser, and the scanning effect looks a heck of a lot like the transporter effect.
Oh,
the,
cool.
The mapping, the cube, you know, the mapping out of, like, of themselves. And, I mean, so my current theory about how this transporter room works is those giant dishes, they totally just, like, they reach out and, like, you know, scan, like, zap your body and decompose you, you know, take you piece by piece out in that grid, the same kind of grid that we see when they're beamed up.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is this is really old school. So you have this giant freaking, like, amplified dish to do this crazy, you know, dematerialization. That's my guess. I have no idea. We will find out. But they're clearly aimed at people's bodies. Like, if you look, they're definitely a dish.
There's, like, a pointed part,
Yeah, and they're definitely right at, like, your, you know, midsection, like your torso. So I kind of imagine they're trying to go for something really that looks really, you know, not advanced compared to whatever we'll see with the Discovery.
Or who knows, maybe they'll morph and turn into something, like, we totally don't expect. You know, that's the thing, is, like, it's just this one image. It's so hard to know. The one thing I think is a little weird is these, and this is super nitpicky, but whatever, these panels in the background behind the dishes. I don't get what that's supposed to be, because they're all kind of cockeyed and not, like, I would expect, like, the inside of a starship to be very, sort of meticulous, and everything has its place and everything. But these, there's like a nice yellow geometric pattern in the background, and then there's these black panels on top of that, interspersed, and they're all like different sizes, and kind of some of them are like cockeyed, and that's weird. That's a weird vibe to me.
I think we're definitely getting to these style over function kind of stuff there. That it's just somebody thought it looked good, I think.
Yeah, it's just weird that it looks kind of messy, and I always think of the inside of a starship being like very precise, and, you know, military has to be, you know, everything is there for a reason and a purpose.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually more than anything that's, well, actually, no, I guess that's always been there, but we've definitely come to expect that from, like, the Next Generation era designers, guys like Rick Sternbach and stuff, who had that sort of term, I think they called it Federation Clean, that they liked to do for a design. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, this is a whole new group of people, a whole new group of designers. So,
yeah,
you know, it's different. That's for sure. The one cool thing that I think a lot of people like, and I certainly do, that's in this photo. Well, there's two cool things in this photo, but the one that I think is, like, as a guy who's always been into the tech part of Trek, what we can see in their holsters of their phasers look pretty darn cool, if you ask me. Because when you look at our zoom in, like on our website, we tried to do the best, you know, zoom and enhance that we could of this thing. The front end sure looks like it's borrowing, in a good way, the Cage Era laser pistol front.
Yeah.
The cool round front with the three little, you know, the sort of the three little projectors, you know, three little, like, laser, well, they call them lasers, right, in the cage. So the three little, like, laser emitters. And so it sure looks like that's what they were going for on the front. And I think this is kind of a nice little pleasing split. The back half, and this part, you can really see.
Yeah, it totally, yeah. It's totally a TOS.
That's exactly. It totally looks like a TOS phaser. Like, there's a knob, you know, there's a dial on the, and everything.
In the back
there's
fin.
There's the little, there's the little heat sinks, like, on the back.
Yeah, the heat sink fin thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think they're trying, and I think this is a good idea, that they sort of split the difference. Because you can't really do, the Cage is a little too 50s ray gun.
Yeah, it is.
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, let's be real. You can't really put those in a modern character's hands and be like, oh, yeah, it's believable.
Yeah, you know, and be serious about it. Yeah.
So I think they did a really, at least from what we can see, it seems like they did a really good job kind of splitting the difference between these, you know, iconic designs and saying, yeah, it's a little older, which is what the Cage laser pistols are. So. Mm-hmm. So I think at least that part, that's a win for them.
I'm also super intrigued by these tactical uniforms.
Yes, and that's kind of cool too. It's different because, so let me rephrase. It is mostly different, but you know, we've seen a tactical vest type of thing before. But they're much goofier looking, if you ask me, which is, if you guys recall, that's actually what security officers wore in the motion picture all the way through the search for Spock. They had, like, a vest, and then the vest was okay, but they also gave those poor guys a goofy kind of helmet.
Oh, that was helmets.
And that's the part that kind of makes it, you know, goofy, you know, kind of sad. But they did, so there is this precedent of maybe you wear, like, a tactical vest when you're security. Or, in this case, they're not security, but they're obviously about to go land in a tough situation. That's what we guess. You can kind of infer from this photo.
As long as they don't have to wear the Spock helmet with, like, the, like, police light on top of it. Spock across the front.
Oh, that terrible, terrible, like, 70s toy.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. I love it too.
If I ever saw one, I would pay a stupid amount of money to obtain it.
Yeah, we were joking a few months ago that we were all going to buy them and wear them to Vegas.
Yes. I would do it. Like, that's not even a joke. I would do that in a heartbeat. I would wear it to work if I had it.
Now that we've said that, all collectible dealers just raise their prices three times for that.
I don't care. Send me a link. I want to buy one.
I bet we can find them on eBay. Yeah. I'm sure it's around. Anyway, so, yeah, I like the tactical. I like the tactical vest.
I know, and it's almost here. Like the tactical thing for beaming down is like, it's like, finally, come on. I always used to laugh in TOS and TNG especially, when they would beam down in their bright-ass red thing to, like, a jungle planet, and they're, like, hiding behind a tree, shooting people. It's like, everyone can see you. You're wearing bright red.
Mm-hmm.
This was not a good choice. So, yeah, it's like, okay, this is actually functional and makes some kind of sense. And I get the whole thing of, like, especially in TNG, it's like, well, we're not, you know, we're not soldiers, right? We're not gonna... But they still would get into these battle situations wearing bright yellow and bright red. It's just like, come on, guys.
Yeah. Well, so that actually raises a kind of interesting question, which is, this most definitely seems like perhaps this is a more militaristic version of Starfleet at the moment in time, or Discovery is. Because look at this tactical gear. Look at the fact that they describe Lorca as a brilliant tactician. So,
yeah, there's some of that, though, even in TNG.
These seem to be clues.
They're even TNG, which is the most, you know, everything's rainbows and puppies of all of the different seasons. Like, TNG is the most, you know, Roddenberry-esque. I think, yes, of all of them. And so, even then, they had some of that stuff where they talked about military tactics and the Picard maneuver.
Yep.
And stuff like
performance.
That.
Performance. That whole episode is them trying to get ready for the
board. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, with the, like, training scenarios and stuff.
Yep, the little training scenario. But that was, see, but they went out of their way to say, no, we're specifically buffing up on our military tactics because of the Borg threat. Normally, we wouldn't do this sort of thing.
Sure, you know? But they still did it.
Right.
Oh, of course. But they had to put the little TNG, you know, bow on it of like, well, no, we don't really do this normally.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, totally.
So,
oh, and by the way, that does bring us to another thing that we learned over the past few days.
Sure does. I know where you're going with this, Brown. Yeah. Drop the bomb.
Which is that somehow they're apparently not going to go by the quote-unquote Roddenberry rules when they do this show.
Yep.
In other words, they're not going to worry about not having character conflict and stuff like that.
Well, what did what
they made
what's
a,
the
they made a very big deal about it in the article, and it's just like they said like the entire franchise, the history of the franchise has been completely handcuffed by this,
and that's
like,
not true, right?
The original series had no problem having character conflict.
Yep.
It was mostly a TNG thing.
Yeah.
Yes. It is very much a Roddenberry who considers himself a visionary from the 70s and 80s version of things. And
late era Roddenberry thought the world was going to be all like Kelly just said, puppies
and then
rainbows.
Strictly forbade it as long as he was alive. And so,
right,
as we well know from, you know, years of interviews with the writers and all kinds of other stuff, they were chomping at the bit to at least allow a little bit of, you know, something between the characters. And Roddenberry, you know, to his dying day, would squash it flat.
Right.
So, like you were saying, they made this a big deal. But also, like you just said, this actually shouldn't be a big deal. And it shouldn't be a surprise because there was no such rule during TOS.
Right.
And this rule was bucked and worked around for the entire rest of the TNG era franchise. So,
I've got a question for you guys. So what, because this could be really important, but I want to know, like, what are the specific, we have to look at this like a Trekkie, what are the specific words that were used? Because when you say, like, if it just was printed, they're not going by Roddenberry rules, like, period, without much explanation of what that means, that's like, that's a huge thing to think about, like, what does that actually mean?
Well, the only rule Roddenberry had was, and this is what people seem to keep, like, think, like, overreacting about, is they mean that Starfleet characters, and this is very specific, this is why things like Deep Space Nine could sort of, like, appease Rick Berman, who was then sort of the upholder of this rule, with this, is that the rule is only about, as Gene would say, our people, the Starfleet people. They're supposed to not have lots of conflict. So anybody that's not Starfleet, you can have all kinds of conflict with. The only thing this rule says is Starfleet officers get along. Like, truly, that's all this means. And so lots of shows worked around it by, gee, well, the conflict comes from somebody who is not within the Federation, and or certainly not within Starfleet.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine did that.
Deep Space Nine did it all the time. But we know this is a big deal. This was a thing that hounded the poor writers of every TNG era show. There's a famous moment, kind of a famous moment that Rick Berman talks about, where he has this, he had a bust of, you know, Gene in his office after Gene's death, and the writers are all having a powwow and they want to break the rule, and so Berman, or not Berman, but he says that a writer, he doesn't specify who in his little recounting of this, but somebody took a ribbon, you know, a piece of cloth or whatever, and tied it around the bust of Gene's eyes and was like, avert Gene's eyes kind of thing.
That's
while they
fantastic.
Talked about breaking his own rule. So this is not a rule that, like, was ever there in TOS. It's not a rule that people are particularly happy with during the TNG era. And it's not really a rule that I think is world-ending the way some people have made it.
No. And the bad robot folks completely ignored it.
Again, because it's TOS. Like, they don't have that rule. That rule doesn't exist.
Right. You need to have sparring between Spock and McCoy. People expect that stuff.
Right. So that was a huge, you know, sort of controversial thing, even though, honestly, There is no controversy. This rule didn't exist in TOS.
So what about, is that why Pulaski, is that part of the reason why Pulaski never flew?
I think so, because they tried to make her kind of crusty, which was good.
She was the, when we had this, when we talked, we did our podcast about Pulaski.
We don't need to reach her.
Everyone should check out, because it was a great
podcast. That's a great podcast, you guys. I love that one.
Yeah, she was supposed to be like the bones, you know, like Pulaski to Data is as Bones to Spock, right? So she was always kind of teasing him and prodding him just the way Bones would do to Spock. But then she didn't last. And I'm wondering if this is, I think we didn't talk about that too much. I guess we got into it. We didn't explicitly say this was like the Roddenberry rule.
I think it was more behind the scenes stuff than that, but other than
the writing. Yeah, yeah. I'm not so sure it had much to do with Gene.
But you're right, though. She would actually sort of,
because that would go against that rule, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because if you could look at season, so I think we all kind of, it's widely accepted, and you can definitely see it, that season one of TNG is the most Roddenberry thing kind of ever, really. Well, maybe accepting the motion picture. And if you look at season one of TNG, they really aren't allowed to have disagreements. I mean, they're really not. They're allowed to kind of use Q as a proxy. They're allowed to point out foibles in 20th century people left and right via like the Ferengi. I mean, they're actually very condescending and mean towards their own audience, if you think about it, because they're constantly saying, oh, these poor people were like 20th century humans. Yeah. Oh, these terrible people, they, you know, they're still at about the 20th century human level development. Poo-poo. It's very, you know, self-righteous and stuff.
Totally.
And so it's really interesting to see, like, that actually is what, that's when Roddenberry had the most influence on the show, and people don't really love season one. And I think that's part of the reason. Is,
yeah, there's a lot of reasons why season.
Sure,
yeah.
There's a lot of reasons. But the point is that the most Roddenberry influence was there, and so the least amount of conflict, the least amount of, you know, sort of interesting things go on between the Starfleet crew. Not necessarily bad to not follow this rule that doesn't really apply anyway. So.
Right, and it shouldn't surprise anybody either, because over the years, when Brian Fuller would be interviewed about Star Trek or whatever, and talked about if he ever made a Star Trek series of his own, that he would definitely have more of a TOS sensibility to it than TNG, because he found TNG, like many others, to be too constricting.
Yep,
that's kind of it's kind of crazy that, like, because Brian Fuller is a very rainbows and puppies kind of guy. So it's amazing to me that he would say that TNG was too much like that.
But Fuller knows how to write
good drama. Yeah. You've got to have conflict.
Yeah, no, I get that. I totally get that.
So
I agree.
But I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it does. It is interesting. But yeah, he of all people would be like, yeah, actually, I want that conflict back.
Right. Yeah. It just shows you that the conflict doesn't have to be, you know, negativity and hatred, and it's a way to make characters real people.
And that's the thing that, like, was already pointed out, is we'll look at, you know, Spock and McCoy. That wasn't particularly nasty, let's say. It's just the two. It was the two of them.
Bones got along,
how they kind of,
McCoy got pretty bad. Like, McCoy got straight up serious racist a lot of times.
Okay,
they both did. So did Spock.
Yeah, really? So did Spock, though. Oh yeah, he would kind of crap on humans.
Spock was extremely elitist.
You're right.
All Vulcans are. Vulcans are racist.
But here's the thing: at the end of the day, though, there's, you know, some good bromance going on between, well, the three of them, really.
Well, there was this respect.
And so, but we know that.
This is
how these two people kind of rub up against each other. They don't always rub each other the right way. That's like life, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah.
But they are not terrible people, you know. They're not, you know. It's not like, yes, that must mean they're terrible people because they have a disagreement. That's just not true, you know.
Nope.
And so that, I think it's fine. I think this is all fine. I think people are worrying about nothing, quite frankly.
I completely agree.
Yeah, me too.
This is nothing but good.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of other bullet points here on our show notes I'm looking at next to this Roddenberry rule thing. There's some more quotes, I'm guessing from the same bit of the Entertainment Weekly article. It, is that where I'm assuming that's where this came from, where Berg and Harberts talked about the motion picture?
Well, yeah. They like I said, EW turned this into multiple articles throughout the week. So that's actually from a separate kind of little drib and drab of their overall article.
Yeah.
But it's, all of these come from Berg and Harberts talking at various
Okay. places. Yeah, it seems like this was one interview that got stretched out into a lot of different articles by EW.
In the magazine, it's a two-page spread, and they've turned it into like 5 days of articles.
Yeah, so, yeah, they're
kudos to Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah, they got a ton of stuff, but they're milking it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yes.
and then we're subsequently doing that. So yeah, there, it sounds like there's a like some love for the motion picture. In Discovery, there's a quote here, quote, "In terms of scope and scale, there's something about Star Trek the Motion Picture that really speaks to us." And then what else do they say?
So we could stop there for a second to talk about that.
Yeah.
So they're talking, because that goes back to a lot of the style and, you know, the way they're shooting Discovery, you know, the way they're filming Discovery, for lack of a better term. It's all digital video, but you know what I mean. They're very, you know, that was sort of speaking to their aesthetic of like, yeah, we really like the grandiosity of the motion picture. We really like the fact that, you know, things feel big, ships feel big, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of, you know, that's good news. Like, it's nice for them. Mm-hmm. It's really nice for them to call out the motion picture. I think that makes a lot of us happy because I actually really like the motion picture.
Yeah, so do I.
So that's nice. There's not a lot of love for TNP.
Yeah, and TNP, one of the things that's great about it is because they had so much money to make it. Star Trek felt like a real universe. Like it was, the level of detail was so extraordinary that everything felt, it didn't feel like a cheap TV show. Like everything had like a weight to it.
Good point. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's part of their point.
Yeah.
It's like, look, we've got the money behind it, just like TNP did.
Well, I remember reading a quote somewhere, something about, this is probably from Berg and Harberts as well, something about world building. Am I remembering that correctly? They're talking about, like, there's a lot of, there's world building that's going on in Discovery. And I think that's part of what you're talking about, Brian, is, like, all this detail and, like, making the world really completely filled out. Like, it seems like a real place with all the ins and outs and the nooks and crannies.
Yes.
Yeah, the Enterprise in the motion picture really does feel like a starship.
Yeah, like you could imagine it being a real thing. Like that, like it, there's a little bit of, you know, there's a little bit of dirt in the corner, and there's people over here doing. It's not like everything is set up with a cardboard backing, and only the people who need to be in shot are there. It's like there's other stuff going on.
Yep.
Yep. And that's one of the things that they did very nicely in TMP, and then Meyer took it to a different level and had a lot of busyness. Which isn't necessarily bad, but both TMP and, say, you know, The Wrath of Khan have a lot of people doing their job, like, in the background, and it's nice. It's like, yeah, this is a really big ship, and there's, you know, the 400-plus other people that, you know, they have jobs to do, and there they are doing it, you know, in the background.
Yeah, so it just opens everything up and makes the universe feel larger, you know what I mean, and more substantial, and I think that's probably what they're talking about when they allude to TMP.
Yeah.
So it seems like some of the other really big news was concerning our main character, Michael Burnham, and her story and her heritage. So what did we find out about her, and what has been the reaction to that?
So we found out that So we found out a couple of different little dribs and drabs from Entertainment Weekly, that some pretty juicy little nuggets actually. So as you guys probably remember, if you guys are regular listeners of the Shuttle Pod. Back on two Shuttle Pods ago, when we were having a reaction trailer to when we were doing our reaction to the trailer, we very much saw this whole what looked to be a young Burnham with Sarek, a flashback, and we all said it. We all said, "Okay, well, obviously, you know, there's got to be something. Maybe she was raised by him," and that's what we found out. Yes, we were actually right. We were definitely right. She seems to have been. We don't know the whole circumstances of it. But she was, it's pretty clear that she was raised by Sarek and Amanda. We don't know how that happens.
But she's not Vulcan, right? She's 100% human.
No, she is very much a human who has come to live with them.
Right.
But we don't know exactly how that works, but it says that she's a human, and she came to attend the Vulcan Learning Center as a child, and then the Vulcan Science Academy as a young woman. So there's a couple interesting little things to note about that. So she went through the Vulcan Science Academy, not unlike Spock started to. And so, but there's a path difference that Spock didn't actually choose to really go down this path. He went to Starfleet.
Right.
Right. He was about, you know, he had that choice of, do I stay with the Vulcan Science Academy or do I go to Starfleet? So apparently she actually went to the Vulcan Science Academy and then ends up in Starfleet somehow, some way. We don't know, you know, where her path led her. So we've now confirmed that, oh yeah, she grew up on Vulcan, raised by Sarek and Amanda. So this is very interesting.
It's shocking to me that that doesn't violate any kind of canon with respect to what we know about Spock in his early life.
I mean, he's never not said that he had like a stepsister, right? So I mean, there's that.
But we never see. Hey,
we already saw his long lost brother.
That's true.
Less said about that. That's the better, true.
But no, that's true. And everyone would accept that as canon. So that's a really good point, Ryan.
Although there was a lot of eye rolling at the time.
Well, we don't really know how this works. We don't know if they've come up with a fairly clever way that she was partially raised by them, you know, maybe not.
It was an exchange program.
Right. So we know that that was now confirmed. And so she has, there's a good quote here about this kind of thing where she says that she has an inner war and it's a journey of self-discovery and finding out what it means to be alive, to be human. To be a Starfleet officer.
I like that, but it's like, Ben, you know, gone.
I know, but if she's been raised as sort of a Vulcan.
So she's female Spock? Like, I don't know. I was a little annoyed, honestly, when I first
read it. Yeah, so was I. And it felt to me like this is territory we've explored already.
It feels lazy, yeah. It's like multiple times. I mean, we had the Spock and we had Data. We always have a character who's like, Seven, what does it mean to be a human?
Yes, but every show usually benefits to have that person's point of view. And this really seems to be part of the Star Trek
It's just so blatant to have her be, like, raised by Spock's parents on Vulcan. Like, at least Data was, like, a completely different character from Spock. And he had a different reason for going down that path. And even Seven had a completely different reason for going down this path of, like, rediscovering her humanity. But with, like, with Michael, it's like she's like basically Spock. It's a little too close for comfort to me. I know, but I did a little bit of an eye roll there when I read it.
So did I.
Well, I think maybe they'd be trying too hard with that. We'll see what actually happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this could just be the pitch. You know, they're trying really hard to lean into the Spock kind of thing, and it's like, yeah. Maybe too much.
And what about Burnham's very difficult choices that she has to make?
Oh, yeah. So the other really kind of juicy but vague kind of nugget they dropped on us this week.
And hokey as well.
True. Kind of hokey. So we know that Sarek plays an important role in her life. And apparently it's very planned. Like, she had this planned life, you know, with Sarek as her mentor. And so she makes a very difficult choice that sends her on her own very different path. Okay, apparently so. And so what they say, though, and this gets very almost filled with definite hyperbole, is they say when we meet her, she's the first officer on the starship Shenzhou. Burnham's choice that we're alluding to is the most difficult choice you can make. It affects her, affects Starfleet, affects the Federation. It affects the entire universe.
The entire universe.
Yeah, that's what I meant by hokey. Yeah, it's like, oh my God.
They're getting a little away from themselves there.
The fate of the universe is at stake.
Because, you know, the Federation exists in pieces of two quadrants, and that's about it. And the entire galaxy is very big.
But so it could be some, like, existential... You know what I mean? Like, it could actually be a universe-affecting thing where it's like... You know, depending on the choice she makes, it's going to affect the way the rest of the universe unfolds.
We shall see.
Or you could say that every choice we make, every moment of every day, is universe affecting if you believe in the multiverse.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Very true. Very true.
But then it's not as exciting.
So whatever that choice is, though, we know that, of course, ends up leading her to being on the Discovery. And so... There you go. Somehow, whatever choice she makes And we've seen this teased, I think we've seen this teased in that trailer that was released. This, whatever goes on with this Klingon ship that she most definitely gets to an argument with Captain Georgiou about what
to do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It can only be that whatever goes on there, whatever surrounding that, it, you know, has some kind of massive ripple effect, you know, in the Federation or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, because they're certainly, you know, framing it that way in the trailer. What little we've got.
It's hard to think that they would make such a stupid mistake. If they meant galaxy affecting, why would they say universe affecting?
But the whole marketing department loves universe. Remember their new tagline that came out with that trailer?
Was it
the edge of the universe begins discovery, wherever the heck it was?
Right. And it's like, no. The Wrath of Khan, they had something stupid like that, too.
Yeah, it's like, no. The universe is ever expanding. You're never going to get to the edge of it.
Maybe it's the universe within.
Ooh. Deep. So we know a tiny bit more about Burnham, at least a little bit. It's fairly, if some somewhat cheesy, it's fairly intriguing at least.
Right. Agreed.
There's that.
Well, I think it sounds like we hit all the big pieces of news. There's more that we didn't even cover, but maybe we should just sort of bullet point these and wrap everything up.
Okay.
Definitely. Because there's lots of little tidbits, but none of them are as big as, you know, the release date or getting to know Burnham better.
Yeah, our main character. It's a big deal.
Yeah,
but we also learn Starfleet Command is a confirmed location. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, some technical aspects of the filming. What else? Oh, they're going to be using an increasingly trendy 2-to-1 ratio. That's bizarre to me.
It is interesting. We don't have time for that, but. Let's just say that's apparently a very trendy thing. I guess other premium shows like House of Cards and some other shows are doing it to sort of be pseudo extra wide.
Weird.
Kind of gimmicky.
Yeah, it's a bit gimmicky. Yeah. There's no reason for it. No reason. I mean, I don't mind it.
Yeah. I don't.
As a film buff, I like wider vistas like that, but like it seems kind of unnecessary.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
I have no problems with it, but kind of silly.
99% of people watching won't notice.
Yes, and in fact, because we pointed it out, we've got people who are bitching about it. Because it's like, we pointed out that you have some slight black bars, but like, what? Why? And it's like, oh, shouldn't have said anything, you guys. Really. Yeah. Really, if they had said nothing, it would have been fine.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. What else? Any other little thing? There's, you know, we did a deep dive on Trek Movie of the uniforms.
Yes,
that have come out.
And this is one of those things that's so in-depth, we would take an entire podcast to talk about it practically if we did.
Yeah, we could do that.
It's fantastic. We totally could. It's fantastic. Our friend of our site, Aaron Harvey, a.k.a. Geek Filter, made this amazing infographic and then worked with a whole bunch of us to, you know, frame it out into a really awesome in-depth article to go with it. And really, the Discovery uniforms that we've seen so far are super complex. And they really are. It took Aaron so much time, you know, looking at, you know, frame by frame, looking at things. It really does seem like this is one of the most intricate uniforms, or probably the most intricate uniform of the franchise so far. We know from a quote, one of the other quotes that we don't really need to get into, but we know from one of the quotes with the showrunners that they had to go, you know, source crazy exotic fabrics for it.
Yeah, and we're in Switzerland or somewhere.
Yeah, they said they had to fly someone to Switzerland for it. And it's like, okay, interesting.
And they kind of, it sounds like they kind of blamed some of the show delays on that, but no one's really buying it.
No, I don't buy that. Mm-hmm. But to go back to the complexity, we know that also parts of it are 3D printed just because that's the only way to make it. You know, it's totally custom.
Right.
So it's going to be a cosplay nightmare for people.
No, 3D printing is easier than you might think these days.
Not the 3D printing part, but I mean all the detail.
The fabric, everything.
This probably has at least three different types of fabrics, if not more.
And the pattern is weird. Yeah. The collar is bizarre. I mean, it's just unusual. It's going to be a lot of weird, asymmetrical cuts.
You're going to have
a lot of remnants left over if you try to cut out this pattern.
Yes, it will be. I commend anyone who tries to do this. I mean, really, seriously.
And people will try. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they come up with.
Should we take bets? Are we going to see this at STLV? Are we gonna
Man, see? I don't know if people have enough time for that.
Ooh, maybe
point.
Too. It yeah. may be.
I
too
think it's
soon.
Too yeah. soon, but there are some people out there that are like just crazy amazing.
Well, let's just say if you're one of our listeners, and I hope you are, kudos, and please like come, please show it off because that would be impressive.
We should have a contest of best kludgy Star Trek Discovery uniform. Like you can show up with like duct tape and like rubber bands and just like put to, like whatever you have in your hotel room, like put together your best Discovery costume and we will award the winner like a case of beer or something.
Hilarious and awesome.
I like that.
So again, we have an amazing deep dive on it for people who do want to try and to tackle this project. Aaron's infographic is absolutely the way to go figure this out.
It's a stunning piece of work. He did such an amazing job. Even the people at Discovery are blown away by it.
It's been mistaken for being something official by people who just kind of glance at it. Mm-hmm. They really, you know, they're like, oh, what? This is, you know, like, nope, it's Aaron and Trek movie.
Which is not new. That's Aaron, I think, is used to that. His work is just
His work is fantastic.
It's phenomenal.
His work is extraordinary. And please check it out.
Yes. You guys have probably seen some of his posters, you know, sort of fan-made posters for Discovery. People have legitimately thought it was, a real product. So you've probably seen his work already. It's fantastic. Yeah.
He's a very gifted guy. Check out his whole portfolio.
Indeed. He's Geek Filter on almost every social media.
Let's see. What else? Oh, Ted Sullivan and Kirsten Baer were, I think, waiting to get on an airplane a couple of weeks ago and got on Twitter and had kind of a ask us anything kind of session with the fans. And while they couldn't answer too many things about Discovery itself, they did have some answers to a lot of cool things about, you know, their favorite shows and various Trek topics. Mm-hmm. And you might want to, we wrote up an article about it and I'm sure you can find it on their Twitter account as well.
Yep. One little tease from that is Ted claims to go pound for pound with Game of Thrones. He thinks that's how good Discovery is. So go check it out.
All right.
And I just have to say that, you know, we don't have any Trek anecdotes for you guys this week because Mr. Jared Whitley is not with us this week. He is off traveling the world, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So
cheers, Jared.
He's actually back in the States right now, but he's visiting family. So
Jared, we miss you, and we'll see you again soon.
Yeah. Cheers, Jared. We're sorry I couldn't make it.
We miss you, JW.
All right. Well, thanks for getting me caught up in everything, guys. I think that I feel like I'm ready now to go and actually discuss the latest Discovery news with people online.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I don't even know what to say to that. Like, yes, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Anyway, guys, there's going to be a lot more coming up soon, and it's an exciting time to be a fan. And
yeah, I think we just pointed out that every month is happening between now and September that will be Trek-related.
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
This is ramping up.
Yep, so keep it a Trek movie for all of your Star Trek needs.
Awesome. All right. We'll see you next time, guys. Thanks for listening.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.